So for being motivated for the practice, sometimes need to make a special effort in bringing up a sense of urgency, a sense of like, I need to do this now, and I can't just fool around living my life so-so, either as a bhikkhu, as a novice, or as a layperson. Anyone can fall prone to the states of so-so-ness and just kind of potter along doing this and that. And every now and again there are things that touch us, they're touching, they're kind of waking us up and kind of calling us to some new sense of now I need to get my act together. And then usually these things last for a while and then when it's so-so again. So it's one thing why the Buddha said, like, it's abhinna pachavekana, it should be frequently recollected. And of course that's also a skill, how to recollect the teachings or the teachings that are arousing a sense of urgency or dispassion in a way that they don't get worn off, that you don't get resistant to them like you'd get resistant to certain germs or certain viruses or so. You don't want to be building up an immunity against the things that are giving you energy, because you need the energy in either way. If we were to go on so, at some point we might get depressive and we might get kind of really down on ourselves or so. So especially if we're living in a monastery where there's no tangible projects where you can say, okay, I've built an orphanage or I've helped so many dying kids in Ethiopia or so, something like that. Like, we're not doing this, but we're working on ourselves, so we have to get the gratification and the feeling of self-respect from our own efforts and from our own actions. It's nothing external much that we can quote. We're left alone more or less to do what we want, which is great. It's a sign of support by the faithful people, and that they trust us, that we're doing the right things and that we're perfecting ourselves, and we're working on areas that people out in the world can't really work on because they're too busy. But if we're not working on them and we're just not doing things properly, and we're just kind of like getting by day, then after some time we know, like, deep inside that we're not doing the right thing, and then we get negative and feelings of guilt or so, which is also a hindrance again. So the best thing is just simply do the things that are needed to be done normally, just with an average sense of activity that anyone here can have and is having. And every now and again fill them with this, like, a little bit of special spice of contemplating things that are not average. Say you got lots of things that are actually happening around yourself that are not normal, or like they're normal but they're arousing a sense of, this is really serious, we gotta work on that. Say sometimes like you feel kind of shocked by the cruelty of nature, for example. You see one of those monitor lizards cruelly ripping apart one of those toads, for example. Or we had a monkey a while ago, which was a nuisance, a real nuisance. First everybody thinks monkeys are sweet, but they're actually really obnoxious, cruel and vicious. And so this monkey was sitting right at the opposite of the porch of number 16 on a tree and eating alive one of those green sweet little dinosaurs with a black and white tail, and was grinning right into the face of the monk as if saying, ha ha ha, I can do that. And the blood was dripping all around. It was really a big mess, ugly, uncivilized, I would say, and shocking to the monk observing it. And of course he took it personally, as thinking the monkey was just making a show, ha ha ha, I can rip apart living beings in front of your eyes. And there was an element of this, because the monkey knew that we were trying to catch it. And as monkeys live on trees, it's not so easy, and they're pretty intelligent. So it was a bit of a show. So then there's the whole area of us being in touch with people that are suffering. Say, for example, you get people that are stranded in society, say people that are kind of like had a nervous breakdown, or people that are drug addicts, or people that are just shocked by certain things, like say accidents or sudden death or so, and then they come to the monastery and we actually are right there together with them, and we can easily take that on as a something that arouses our sense of urgency and makes us feel gotta get this thing together. You can't just kind of live so. You've got to be diligent, otherwise things for ourselves will happen in a way that we're not ready for it, and we see how other people are not ready for it, and they crumble and they don't know what to do. And even your own relatives, say if you think about cases of sickness and death with your own family, your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, like experiencing somebody in the family dies, and you see how little they are actually ready to deal with that in a good way. And you think, wow, I'm so fortunate to be here and have the tools to transcend that mass of suffering and transcend that being slave to the victim mentality. Just you're able to emancipate yourself through the right attitude, and you got all the tools the Buddha gave them, and they're right here. And so sometimes that can help, like just really take these things in and make much of an effort to internalize what's actually happening. If somebody loses a relative or somebody is in agony because of cancer, things like that, we witnessed that a lot, like been to the hospital many times. We saw people with brain damages, and we saw people with in the last stages of cancer, and we even saw the dead bodies. And we have to keep it somehow affecting our sense of like life is not for sure, and our sense of wanting to transform our own lives to a better state of dealing with these things. So we saw people with a locked-in syndrome. Like you read about that in the newspaper. You meet somebody who's got it. It's just really something that makes you really wonder about life. Makes you wonder about your own body, makes you wonder about how this all works. And it's right at one's fingertips to find out how it works through the meditation practice, through the application of wisdom, application of the Buddha's teachings, being meticulous in seeing how things interact with the physical part of our lives, seeing the mental reactions to that. It's all right there, so we should really kind of use all our creative energy to apply that. Or yesterday, on the positive side, sometimes one gets motivated. Like yesterday we had a guest coming who's obviously skilled in meditation. He's got lots of, as they say in Thai, kong gao, like old stuff, like on his CV for many past lives. He can probably do amazing things. For example, like the stuff that he was talking about, it wasn't boasting, it was just more or less natural for him. It's like kind of like before going to sleep, just focus on a few breaths and then leave his body lying there and go, this is what they call astral body in the West, go tiao, go on a tour. What he said is actually not essential to be doing that, but like he's of the understanding that this is what happens when your physical body dies. And there's a kind of like, usually when these people in meditative states leave their body, then there's a certain bond that ties them back. But that bond is cut or is made impossible to hold on to if the physical body is being given up through the life force being extinguished. So then he was using this as a training of non-attachment to the body and so forth. May it be so, may it be true, may it be helpful, but what it does change one's own feeling of like, okay, there's more that people can experience in this life than just like mopping up and down the sala, so and so, sweeping leaves back and forth, so and so. Got to take these things to a level that really touch the essential existential tasks that we are facing, especially as Buddhists and especially as monks, when we've got all the opportunity. So it can be positively inspiring if you meet somebody who's got certain tools for transcending reality that oneself doesn't have. There may be still lots of areas that one needs to work on. So to use that sense of urgency and sense of we're lucky that we have all the things that we need, and not get complacent and not get into that so-and-so mind, which later we'll regret after some time, after having lived long enough off your old barami. At some point it fires back, and then people just feel that they're indebted, and they sometimes throw it all and find some quick distraction and sense pleasures instead of making a U-turn and using all the tools that they were given. So whatever it is that makes you feel energized, may it give you a boost in the practice, and take it to the heart in whatever way you can. Sometimes it is not easy to make special efforts in that sense of like making outrageously great long heroic meditation efforts, for example, like sitting unmoving for 6 hours or so. I was talking about that the other day with the Mechis. One of the Mechis said she was frustrated with that, and more or less both of us, Ajahn Rochen and me, said like, it doesn't have to be for everybody. Like, it's not like you have to get into the Guinness Book of Records in order to attain some insight or so. Not at all. Like, and so she felt like this was the method that all the Krubajans say you got to do, and it didn't work for her. If we're of that same kind, that we're not prone to having 6 hour sits or 12 hour sits or 12 day fasts or like whatever, standing on your leg and whatever you can do. But if we're just in an average way of practicing, still there is a way of enriching the things that you're doing with that spirit of life is precious, and every application of mindfulness and my effort counts, even if you're involved with things that are kind of exterior work. You can still just focus on the things that you're doing and bring your mind back to simple teachings like life is not for sure, or remember that you've just possibly visited somebody in hospital who's about to die, and just think about these things, make them present in what you're doing. It doesn't always have to be that you're reaching for the stars in your practice, but you can do the things that are normal, but empower them with a sense of urgency. Just when we go to do ceremonies, whatever type of ceremonies they are, it's very important to really be determined to do it with all one's heart, because we can easily get into the role of thinking, oh, another funeral, oh, another Sangadana, oh, another, you know, whatever, birthday, or I don't know what people celebrate. Weddings, we don't have so many, but like we can easily get into a mode of routine, and it is very important just to take these things to the heart in a Dhamma way, not personally, but in a Dhamma way, that whenever people come and they face suffering, they see the monks, they feel some connection with the Dhamma. And if we ourselves aren't connected with the Dhamma, it's not appropriate. We have to be very mindful of the implications of all the things that are happening around us. It's a wisdom faculty that we need then. Say if somebody is dying, you can see, okay, another dead person, and it's easily said, like, it's tamada, you know, like you can easily use stock phrases to dismiss something which is very significant. It's the most important thing for many people in birth and death, old age, or like birthdays or special days when they come to the monastery and tambun or so. Sometimes it's the highlight of the year. So I feel like many times, especially with death, we need to remind ourselves not to take these things superficially, because that's why we're here, is in order to get an angle on life and death and be able to practice with these things rather than just kind of doing practices that are going through the motions and without any feeling of involvement of satipanya. Sometimes death, like in an abstract way, is not really shaking anybody. Say, if you talk about death and read the statistics, so and so many thousand people died in an earthquake or in a typhoon or or even of hunger or so. It's like, okay, there's some kind of grandness around the news, but the news and the excitement around big news, they're not affecting the emotions in that way. As they, like, it could also be the news about celebrity getting divorced or so, you know, or marrying or so, that makes people excited. The excitement about news is not the thing that comes from the heart. Many times it's an overkill of shocking things that then people have to kind of compartmentalize and put away into one drawer and not have their heart be affected by it. And again, we don't want to be personally affected, but we want to have that sense of Dhamma Sangweka and get a sense of dispassion with what's happening like in the world and with what's happening with human life, with life itself, with in the round of rebirth. People just take turns coming and going, and to see the bigger picture in that sense, see the comparison of how oneself holds on to one's own life and gives it so much importance that one can't even kind of like change a bit of plans every now and again, because one is so attached to one's own kind of life story and supposed biography or plans and things like that. So it must be the same for everybody, that everybody really loves their own kind of like arrangements in lives and the kind of the little niches that people find about happiness here and there, behind the chimney or behind the television or behind the computer, I don't know, whatever they love, and then eventually it's all gone. And I found it's particularly touching when in the funeral you get some of the relatives to speak about the person, and that's many times when the tragedy of a human life comes up. It's like what the stuff they make movies from is like happening right in front of our eyes with each lifetime and each story. Even a little dog on the road, you know, is pitiable in that sense. You could make a movie about his life as well. A three-legged dog in Bindabad Bungwai. I wonder what happened to him, what he's feeling. You know, this kind of empathy is what makes then people cry or so. But like, we don't want to shed tears, we just want to get the feeling of, yeah, life is not the way people expect it. Life is not to be hoped much, not to be hoped for from life. All we want is peace and freedom from that attachment to our own life story or our own kind of biography or our own identity. And whenever we feel that people suffer from having an identity and having to give it up, then we get this feeling of wisdom working, and maybe it propels us to a level of thinking differently about what we are doing with ourselves. So to make that connection on a funeral is very important, not just thinking, okay, another one, I hope they've got some coke, and I hope they got I hope it's over soon, I hope the Jagannath Jangwat won't talk too long, or, you know, I hope whatever, you know. Yeah, just really sitting there and contemplating this and contemplating the helplessness of people that don't have the Dhamma. If they don't have the background that you have and the knowledge about the teachings of the Buddha and the practice that you have or that we have, then they're really kind of lost. Many times they're really deluded. You can see how they behave, especially in cities and official funerals. It's quite shocking how far they are from seeing reality. And then the point again being that then one reminds oneself to see reality in that situation and be uplifted by the working of panya in oneself in relation to the cruelty of life, rather than kind of being just kind of going through the motions and saying, yeah, funerals, you know. Yeah, kind of also in the funerals in the monastery, one can be also kind of quite excited about them, because there's a sense of shockingness about the sights that one sees, and similar to the autopsies that we went, one can be kind of excited in a superficial way about it, because it's something that sounds scary, and one is able to do it and go there and look at it. But like, if it's really touching, it just changes one's attitude to one's own wishes and hopes and aspirations in this life for oneself, rather than having something that's out there and being talked about or boasted about or kind of like laughed about even. So I offer that for reflection today.